odprti termin Radio Študent. Združene države Amerike so v zadnjih dveh mesecih močno povečale politični in ekonomski pritisk na z nafto bogato Venezuelo. Prevladujoči medijski diskurs izpostavlja, da venezuelska vlada močno krši človekove pravice, ter da je s svojimi zgrešenimi ekonomskimi odločitvami kriva za nastalo humanitarno krizo v državi. V današnjem intervjuju ne bomo poskušali razkrinkati pol resnic in laži o situaciji v Venezueli, ki jih proizvajajo in ali širijo množični mediji. Ne glede na to, da je naša sogovornica, neodvisna novinarka Abby Martin, za to nadse primerna. Kogar zanima slednje, predlagamo, naj se obrne na portal Venezuela Analysis in druge progresivne neodvisne medije. S tem se ukvarja tudi Martin v oddaji The Empire Files, v kateri pokriva teme vojne in neenakosti skozi prizmo ameriškega imperializma. Gre za raziskovalno novinarsko oddajo, ki jo financira medijska mreža Telesur. Martin je tudi članica upravnega odbora Media Freedom Foundation, ponaše Fundacija za svobodo medijev. Ta je najbolj znana po projektu Cenzurirano, ki kritično proučuje medije in zagovarja njihovo svobodo. Nasprotuje cenzuri in jo razkriva, promovira neodvisno raziskovalno novinarstvo, medijsko pismenost in kritično mišljenje. V okviru projekta vsako leto izdajo publikacijo sedmih najbolj popačenih ali prezrtih novic. Upamo si trditi, da bo poročanje množičnih medijev o situaciji v Venezueli in njihovo nekritično povzemanje PR poročil ameriške vlade dobilo svoje mesto v letošnji publikaciji projekta Cenzurirano. Pri pritiskih ZDA glede humanitarne pomoči hitro naletimo na protislovnost ameriške zunanje politike. Ameriški svetovalec za državno varnost John Bolton je odkrito priznal, kako koristno bi bilo za ameriška podjetja vlaganje v venezuelski naftni sektor. Kljub temu pa večinski mediji še vedno povzemajo narativ, ki ga ustvarja krvoločna elita ZDA. Zato se obračamo neposredno k medijem in njihovi vlogi v konfliktu med ZDA in Venezuelo. Poleg lažnih informacij v klasičnih medijih je cenzura zajela tudi socialne medije. Google je že pred časom prilagodil iskalne algoritme, da med rezultati niže uvrščajo medije, ki odstopajo od sredine političnega spektra, bodi si levo, bodi si desno, o čemer smo na Radiu Študent že poročali. Med drugim je mikroblogerska platforma Twitter pred kratkim blokirala več kot 2000 računov, ki naj bi bili pro-venezuelsko usmerjeni.
United States shifted gears with their economic and political pressure on Venezuela in the past month or two, and I'm wondering what role does the media play in this conflict?
The media plays a crucial role, as we know, with almost every U.S. military intervention. The propaganda arm and the propaganda wing of the U.S. empire is working overtime to lay the groundwork and lay the framework for that military intervention. So, you know, back, you can look back to Iraq, you can look to Libya, and now Venezuela. So usually what preempts this military intervention is the idea, is the notion that there's a humanitarian crisis that begs Western intervention. Now, the corporate media as a whole likes to bemoan agencies like Russia Today and Telesur as state propaganda organs. Yet it is very interesting that they lay down and literally echo the Pentagon line when they are not controlled by the state. So then you really have to ask yourself, why is it that the corporate media that's subsidized by big banks, oil companies, and defense contractors parrots the propaganda for and on behalf of the U.S. government. And it really kind of reveals who's really controlling our government, perhaps the same people who are owners and advertisers of the mainstream media. Now, the media has been painting a general picture here to kind of frenzy up the propaganda on Venezuela. They say it's a dictatorship. They say it's a starving nation. And that Maduro is, you know, wantonly executing peaceful protesters who try to oppose him. And that Juan Guaido, they declare Juan Guaido as a democratic leader that's abiding by the Constitution to take power. Now, all of those things are bald-faced lies and can be easily debunked. There's, you know, been 28 elections since 1999. The Socialist PSUV party has won almost every single one. Venezuelan elections are some of the most heavily monitored and observed elections in the entire world. There's a series of steps that Venezuelans take to prove their identity, and every vote can and is audited generally. Now, moving on to the Juan Guaido as a legitimate, you know, democratic transition leader, no, that's crazy. Maduro is the elected leader. He just won a presidential election last year that the opposition, the MUD coalition that Juan Guaido is a part of, refused to participate in. They boycotted those elections to deem them illegitimate. Now, the White House even went as far as actually calling Henry Falcone, one of those opposition leaders who actually defied the boycott and actually ended up running against Maduro. The White House threatened to sanction him if he didn't drop out. So now we're looking at this kind of idea that Juan Guaido, who was just elected by a small cabal within a National Assembly body, which has been defiant and refusing to cooperate with the rest of the government, which is why they've had to sidestep the National Assembly quite a bit. He was elected within this small cabal to be president of the National Assembly. That's literally all that happened. And they're kind of wrapping this constitutional garb around a completely illegal, undemocratic coup carried out by the U.S. government. Now, Juan Guaido has said multiple times that he was not even going to go along with this without the phone call from Mike Pence himself urging him to do so. So we've gotten multiple confirmations that this was indeed facilitated and orchestrated by the U.S. government. And as we know, ever since the election of Hugo Chavez in 1999, the U.S. empire has had its sights set on Venezuela, which is the most oil-rich country in the world. So this, none of this would be happening without the corporate media paving the way. And also these non-governmental organizations, Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International, that parrot the same lines. And we can get into why that is in a second, but that's the reality of what's happening right now.
So you've already mentioned that the picture in mainstream media is easily debunked, and alternative or, I don't know, progressive independent media, such as, you know, the Real News Network or Venezuela Analysis, they show drastically different picture that what you get from the mainstream media. Also, you have made a big effort in trying to expose the mistruths we get from the mainstream media, but what are, in your opinion, key factors or even players that form the narrative in the mainstream media?
Sure. And, you know, the two other myths that I forgot to debunk are the starving nation myth and the fact that, you know, there's authoritarian crackdown on dissent. Neither of those things are true. Anyone who's honest about Venezuela will tell you that there's shortages of items. There's not a mass famine. There's food everywhere. It's just particular items that are in shortage. And then you realize that who's producing these items. It kind of goes back to the economic war being waged inside and outside of the country. And in terms of the protesters, there's hundreds of thousands of people who peacefully protest with no government interference whatsoever. It's the violent arms of the protests that are, you know, are commandeering trucks, burning giant flaming street barricades that kill people that have a response from the state. Now, the biggest players in setting this agenda are the actual Pentagon officials, the generals, and the Trump administration officials who work in concert with the corporate media. Now, you see these people just paraded around, you know, while the domestic media, while the corporate media challenges Trump on domestic issues, they really line up in a uniform fashion to push him from the right and to just completely accept his foreign policy agenda whenever it comes to upping U.S. empire, militarism, or war. And they parade around these generals, these Defense Department spokespeople on all of these shows to just give their endorsement of what's going on in Venezuela, to preempt this by saying, well, we've got to do something, right? So what are we going to do? And it's really all about a couple things. It's about access. It's about not stepping on the toes of, you know, who's funding you or the self-censorship that goes on in these media organizations. But let's be frank. I mean, these people don't join the media to lie. They don't get paid to lie. They join these media organizations, and they're picked to put out these narratives because they go along with the U.S. empire. I mean, they join these outlets because they believe in those myths that underpin American exceptionalism and believe in the notion that we're a benign force, and when we do regime change around the world, it's for humanitarian reasons. It's for a good intention. And you actually have to believe those things if you join these organizations and if you join these outlets and if you're putting out these falsehoods. And a lot of these journalists see themselves as direct opposition to governments that the U.S. empire deems its enemies. So when they write about countries like North Korea, when they write about countries like Venezuela, they're already coming from that activist lens where they feel like these countries don't deserve sovereignty and to stand on an independent leg. So it's pretty disturbing, frankly, to see, again, wall-to-wall propaganda being peddled, whether it's kind of naked aggression, where, you know, you have the Fox News right-wing media that parrots that, you know, it's about oil and brazenly just openly talking about how we need to take the oil. And then you have the kind of liberal arm of the media that's masking this naked aggression in the guise of humanitarianism. And it's disgusting either way.
Yes, John Bolton even said it, I saw it in the news, that it would be really nice if American companies could invest in oil production in Venezuela and so on. Yeah, so this line is like pretty open. But what about the European media outlets? They also seem to have bowed to this narrative that the United States are pushing.
Yes. So this is another interesting facet of this, is that when you look at what's called the, quote, international community, so you can go back to the Iraq War and look at this kind of farce of the coalition of the willing, right? These countries that supported the U.S.'s aggression in the Iraq War. Well, when you really break down who is the international community that supposedly supports the installation of this puppet regime in Venezuela, it's all the white colonizer and imperialist nations. So, you know, if you look at Europe, for example, and I know you're talking about the media, but this goes along with it because the media arms of these states parrot the same thing. So whether you're talking about BBC or France 24, it's all the same. And you know, they consider themselves part of the international community. But when you really look at who that is, it's really the white nations. And Africa's erased from the dialogue, which, you know, every single country in Africa except Morocco does not support Juan Guaido. Every single country in the Middle East except for Israel does not support Juan Guaido. And even in Europe, there's stark contrast within Europe. You have the kind of non-white nations like Greece, Cyprus, that do not support Guaido, but they're completely erased and eliminated from the dialogue. And I find that really reprehensible as well, because it's kind of this facade of, oh, the world supports this. No, the world does not support this. And in fact, the large majority of the planet stands in opposition to this. But again, history is written by the victors and by the winners and by the colonizers. And that's what we're seeing happening right before our eyes, real time. And I think that that's a really fascinating element of this, is that because of the advent of social media, we're seeing this coup play out in real time and in a very disturbing way that's never really been done before. And I'm really worried about where it's going to go, because as we know, they just gave this arbitrary deadline that Maduro needs to lift the aid in by tomorrow. Otherwise, there will be consequences. Now, we know the U.S. military is staged at the border, and we know how far they're willing to go. And the media is just, again, this ocean of lies that they parrot and facilitate. And the blood is really on their hands at the end of the day here.
Do you have any comments on other international news outlets, such as Al Jazeera or Russia Today and Press TV?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're a lot more fair. You know, again, these entities, state media, is discussed as kind of this cartoonish depiction that it's this top-down propaganda arm of whatever government is, you know, engineering the state agency. And that's completely false. I know firsthand from working at two international news bureaus that I had complete editorial freedom, way more than anyone at the corporate media can really say about their jobs. Not only did I have editorial freedom and can completely do what I want at Telesur, which everyone, you know, calls this propaganda arm of the Venezuelan government, I was able to do whatever I wanted. I could have openly talked about Maduro, Venezuela, all of those things. So it's really just very, very obvious that these outlets are painted as illegitimate because the corporate media is deflecting their own illegitimacy. And they've never taken accountability for the lies that they've paved that have caused wars, that have taken the lives of millions of people. And they're never going to tell kind of that approach that Al Jazeera will and that other state outlets will, because, again, they're beholden and captured by their advertisers and owners. And so Al Jazeera was one of the only outlets that interviewed me. And they gave both sides of the story. And really, CNN and all the way down the line cannot say the same.
So maybe I'd like to shift a bit now, because I'm a co-host of a show about regulation of technology and maybe technology mm-hmm. from social perspective. And a big part of what we usually talk about are also social networks. So with Brexit and election of Donald mm-hmm. Trump, the term fake news got popularized, especially with the connection to mm-hmm. social networks. But there's, at least in Europe, there's also a conflict between classical media and that have their portals on the World Wide Web, but retain the old format of a newspaper article. And there's like this new erupting social media that's like getting its place as a new source for people to get their news from. So in theory, one could say that social media would be more pluralistic because people participate themselves. But with recent action of microblogging platform Twitter, they deleted more than 2,000 accounts linked to Venezuela, puts this pluralistic idea a bit upside down. So do you have any comment on these recent Twitter actions?
Of course. So this entire Russiagate narrative, I'm sure it's bleeding over to your country as well. Somehow Russia's, you know, fomenting dissent all around the world. And I guess all the problems are now blamed on Putin. But ever since this Russiagate narrative started here to deflect and absolve the Democratic Party of their responsibility for, you know, losing to a reality star clown, they have started to target social media and alternative media under the banner of fighting not only Russian propaganda, but quote-unquote fake news. So we're kind of wading through these mass hallucinations where everything is blamed on Russia on one hand, and everything deemed fake news that doesn't kind of, worship our dear leader Trump. And so they've galvanized tech giants, and they've kind of created this wave of hysteria to now have us accept soft internet censorship. And it's not against Russian propaganda, and it's not against fake news. That's just kind of the scapegoats to now just target people who are dissenting against the establishment line. Anyone who threatens the status quo is now kind of censored, backpaged, or completely removed now from social media. Now, if you look at Facebook in general, Facebook is the worst. They are openly working with Weekly Standard, which is a neocon think tank, or neocon rag, rather, full of Iraq war architects and criminals, CIA spooks and goons. They're literally openly working with this organization along with the U.S. government to quote-unquote filter our news on Facebook. And so Facebook really is dead. All of our stuff has been backpaged on there. Then you turn over to Google, who of course owns YouTube now. They have preemptively changed their algorithms to backpage and censor alternative content. And a lot of that is left-leaning progressive outlets. Now, we know that right-wing media, you know, Breitbart, all down the line, they have billionaires funding them. They can get their message out. But these progressive outlets like Real News Network, Empire Files, My Show, we sustain on donations. And we lost a lot of hits when Google did this. And none of that can come back because they've now just completely changed their algorithm where now you can't even find our content, really, when you're looking for it unless you really, really, really dig. And what's scary about that, Rio, is that there was no law forcing them to do this. They did this preemptively. And at the same time, we hear all the time about how China censors their internet. Well, this was done, you know, at the behest of the government without even there being a law to do so. So it's very disturbing what's going on the tech side of this. And lately, you mentioned Twitter. Yeah, the exact same thing is happening. You know, we're living in a media sphere right now where we have this kind of notion of egalitarianism and pluralism, and this reflection of what democracy is supposed to be reflected on social media, where anyone can really have a voice, anyone can make the news. But that's not the way it exists anymore at all. We all bought into these services thinking that that would be the way it is forever. And in fact, we kind of sold ourselves out, where now we're beholden to Google, to YouTube, to Twitter, to Facebook. And Twitter's doing the same thing. You know, we're in a media sphere that's completely dominated by right-wing Venezuelans, pro-coup Venezuelans, and exiles. And a lot of those people have, you know, more access to Twitter. Then you can look at the sock puppet accounts, the bots that are no doubt employed as part of these regime change operations. So it's really hard to even see and filter through what's real and what's not. But that narrative is being completely shaped and curated by these tech giants who are removing Russian bots, Iranian bots, and Venezuelan bots, which I find really odd, because why no bots on Saudi Arabia? Why no Israeli bots? Why no bots from the UAE? Why is it only these, quote, enemy states that the U.S. empire is trying to foment regime change in? Are these tech giants working with the U.S. government to censor online? So it is very, very disturbing, and it's a very slippery slope, because people, you know, this has somehow become this partisan issue on the right, but really it's the left who's being affected the most by this, and it's the left who, again, is grassroots, survives on donations, and doesn't have that injection of Koch brother money and Mercer cash that they can get their message out there. So that's the real target of this soft censorship from these tech giants.
For the last question, I'm wondering, where do you get your news from, and where would you suggest our listeners to look for news on Venezuela?
So as you mentioned, Venezuela Analysis is the best, hands down the best, English-speaking source of Venezuelan news from a grassroots perspective that's going to be cutting through this completely false narrative that we hear peddled pretty much from every other media outlet. And, I mean, honestly, Telesur, even though it's funded by a conglomerate of Latin American states, including Venezuela and including Cuba, it was created as a response to this corporate media hegemony. This domination of the narrative that exists that foments regime change and uses the corporate media as a tool to weaponize information. And that was created as a response to that, a joint project by Fidel Castro and Hugo Chavez about a decade ago. And it really does provide the grassroots perspective. It really does provide the people's, the marginalized voices perspective to the table. And, you know, I just encourage everyone to become media literate, to understand the sources, understand the advertising structure, and understand the ownership of these media sources, and train yourself how to disseminate the truth, how to get your information from a wide variety of sources, but most importantly, to support independent grassroots outlets that really work very hard to provide that marginalized people's perspective. And that's no doubt Real News Network is hands down the best, Venezuela Analysis, and of course my show, The Empire Files, and we just put out a new episode today with the actual human rights rapporteur from the UN, who was completely ignored after he went to Venezuela and actually did this really shocking report articulating how the sanctions have really caused a humanitarian crisis in themselves. And so he was completely ignored by the corporate media, and so I was happy to give him the platform on my show, The Empire Files. And so it's really important for us to not only, you know, follow and support the journalists that we want to hear, but also the outlets that are doing this work to bring the truth to you guys.
Intervju je pripravil Noveli. Radio. Student.